shut for you.
Alrighty, we are back for another exciting edition of COVID Leaf Cloverleaf Radio. I'm the host of the most, Jimmy Falcon, the king of the quarantine, and it's an absolute honor to welcome the human locomotive, Irish Davey O'Hannon. How's it going, Davey?
Hi, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm fantastic, sir. Yourself?
I'm hanging in there for a broken-down old guy. You know, we live close by the beach, so that's my work for the week, going to the beach. That's what we do.
Sounds like you have a hard life.
Oh, yeah. My wife's got a harder life living with me. That's it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I know that you grew up a fan of pro wrestling. I was curious what it was like being in legendary Madison Square Garden when Bruno beat Nature Boy Buddy Rogers for the title.
Oh, my God. When I was a kid, my family would kind of, they wouldn't make fun of it, but they'd say, oh, boy, there's Bruno's number one fan. I was, I lived and died with Bruno, and, in the garden that night. It was unbelievable. It was just that was the old garden that had a tremendous atmosphere, an arena filled with character and huge history. And so I got to be there. And then, years later, to be able to be Bruno's friend and co-worker was just surreal for me. Just surreal.
Oh, he was the living legend. He was one of the best. He had a body before his time. I mean, so many people patented so much stuff after Bruno Sammartino.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what? The Bruno that people didn't see was even better. This guy was the most sincere, principled, caring guy you ever want to meet. A real tough guy to get around. If you had a character flaw and it was disrespect or dishonesty or something, Tenucci used to say, "Well, I guess he's going to scratch him out of the book," and so that would be it for you if you weren't straight up with Bruno. But lucky for me that group of guys accepted me. There were no wrestling schools or anything back then. I just kind of BS'd my way into the business. So for them to kind of take me under their wing and teach me and accept me was unbelievable. And Bruno was even more unbelievable.
Yeah, speaking of the greats, I got word last night that a man I had the honor of working a wrestling show with and even interviewing, Kamala, of course, passing away. Did you have the honor of knowing him?
Yeah, I knew him as Sugar Bear Harris.
Oh, wow, yeah, long time ago.
Yeah, he was an NWA guy for a long time, and I worked in the NWA. And, there's another guy that the character that the people saw was polar opposite of the kind of guy he was. He was just a wonderful, friendly, always in a good mood guy. Much later years, he was working an independent show up here somewhere, and my son, my oldest son, decided that he wanted to take a try at some wrestling, and he was on a show with Kamala, and Jimmy just took care of him and sat with him. He was just a great guy. I'm sad to see that he had a pretty tough finish at the end there.
Yeah, it was unfortunate, all the health problems he had, and, this coronavirus has taken a lot of strong people and a lot of great people, so.
Yep, and he, and he was not treated right in this business. He really wasn't, and that's a shame, too.
Absolutely. The color barrier was pretty strong, just like, in everywhere else in America for many, many years.
Yeah, it was a crazy thing. We didn't feel it working in the business. Some of my closest, when you were in the business, we had a mix of people that was just beyond belief. So as far as the wrestlers went, I didn't see any prejudices or racism or things like that, but I think in the offices there were, and clearly if you listen to Kamala's story, that certainly was the case.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate because he had great talent. Man, that gimmick was just so solid.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, it was great. And he was a really good worker in the business. You know, I never worked with him. But, you know, we had little things in the dressing room. You know, a guy'd come in and, you know, they'd look at each other after working and say, easy, huh? Yep. You know, or if you walked in and somebody in the dressing room would say to you, well, sounded good. You know, that was a big compliment. That was a big compliment because they heard the crowd. And, you know, whether he was Kamala or whether he was Sugar Bear, always a good one for him. You know, he always gave the fans their money's worth.
Oh, absolutely. Soft-spoken man, but very kind-hearted and very nice.
Yep, that's for sure.
And another great man, this time he was your tag team partner, was the great Dennis Stamp, who unfortunately passed on a few years back. What was it like working with Dennis and holding the NWA Western States tag titles?
Yeah, Dennis was a great hand in the ring. He was also a really good amateur. You know, tough guy, could handle himself. And Dennis... You know, I guess he was like a leftover hippie, man. It was a trip being with him. You know, we were together a lot since we were tag partners every night, you know, in Amarillo, lots and lots of miles. Dennis was a great guy, and, you know, I think that he had a bit of a reputation with promoters of having a bad attitude, but he didn't have a bad attitude. He had a great attitude for the business because he always wanted to make things be believable and be right. And promoters sometimes had their own ideas. You know, promoters had their own ideas. So if you kind of, you know, went against the grain and made a suggestion, well, then that could get you your notice and get you sent someplace else. But Dennis was a great guy to be with.
I'm sure he was. Everything I've seen about him seems like he was a really top-notch guy as well. There's a lot of great guys like that in wrestling over the years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so many of them. You know, so many of them. You got to understand, you know, I mean, I don't have to tell you because you know how different things are now. Although I can't comment on it because I don't watch. I don't see anything going on. I mean, the closest I came to it is when Bruno was inducted into Vince's Hall of Fame. Vince and Bruno straightened out the problems they had for a short time. And Bruno invited Dominic DiNucci and I to come over for that WrestleMania weekend. And initially, I said to him on the phone, I said, "Dad, you know what, Bruno? I said, I'm just not interested in going through this stuff. So I think I'm going to skip it." And, you know, I hung the phone up, and, you know, my wife knew I was talking to Bruno. And she said, "Oh, what's going on? How's he doing? How's his wife?" I said, "Oh, yeah, fine. He invited me to the WrestleMania and the Hall of Fame induction in 2 weeks at the Garden and the Meadowlands Stadium." So she said, "Yeah." I said, "Yeah, I told him no." And she looked at me like I had three heads. She said, "What?" She said, "Bruno just called and invited you to his Hall of Fame induction. And you said no." She said, "When in the world are you going to go to a WrestleMania again?" I said, "Oh, I think never." I said, "But let me give him a call back right now." You know, I called him back. I said, "Bruno, I had a moment of temporary insanity there." I said, "So yeah, I'd really like to be your guest." And that's the closest I've been to the Today Wrestling in a long time. And in fact, Dominic, myself, Ivan Koloff, rest his soul, and Roman Reigns' dad, Sika, sat in the back in the lounge and sort of watched the show on the monitor and sort of didn't, you know, so that's as close as I've got to it.
Wow, that's really cool. I went to Survivor Series in 2005, but never been to a WrestleMania. That's always been a dream.
Uh-huh. It was a production, Jimmy. It was something like we'd never seen. You know.
I'm sure.
And you know, they treated us. I can't complain about how we got treated. We got treated royally, production, but that's what it was. It was like a Hollywood production. You know, when we got to the Garden that night for the Hall of Fame thing, you know, they took us in the back, and, you know, it had been the first time since a lot of us had been in the Garden in a long time, so it was kind of neat, you know, getting back in there and looking around and you know, checking out all the people. You know, it was really a special thing, and they, you know, they recognized us, and you know, they treated us really well, so that was kind of neat. And then, you know, the next day was the WrestleMania, and, you know, we were in the stadium when they finally shuttled us all over there from the hotel. Dominic and Koloff and I took a peek out at the ring, you know, from way up where we were in the back in the press seats, and I went, holy crap, look at this. It was unreal. You would have thought they were producing Star Wars there or something.
Wow, that's something else. It amazes me how much money that WWE can put into one show and then have, you know, have those pay-per-views monthly.
Yeah, it's, but again, you know, it's, that's how the business changed. You know, he's there for the wow effect. You know, when we did it, you know, depending on where you were working, you know, we went back week after week after week and told a story, and, you know, and built the houses up, and, you know, you had the big blow-off in the big towns, whether it was the Garden or, you know, wherever, you know, on the East Coast here, they had the big buildings, and, you know, all over the country, the different territories did the same thing. You know, so it was up to us to tell the people the story and make it believable for them. You know, they don't have to worry about making it believable now, because it's not, you know.
Right. Oh, I had so much fun, though, in wrestling, and it wouldn't matter who told me it was fake, because I knew deep down that it wasn't, because it hurt like hell. But it was just so much fun, and the showmanship, and just being able to go out there and make people mad was so much fun.
Yeah, well, you know what? I mean, you know, well, guys like me, the old guys like me, usually don't say the F word. But what we did, what you saw happening in the ring was happening. You know, that was happening. I mean, whether we knew the outcome or not is another question.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, we did protect each other's bodies, and because we had to be businessmen also, and you had to do this the next night. And the next night, and the next night, and, you know, you had to make a living. But if you know, listen, I used to tell a guy, especially if he's a new guy, you know, if he's gonna hit me, you know, and I don't mean punch my teeth out,
yeah.
But if you're gonna give me a body shot, and it's really gonna not be a good punch, and I'm not gonna feel it, I'm gonna hit you back twice as hard.
Yeah. Connection.
Twice as hard. You know, and I would tell new guys, you know, if whatever I was doing, if I was working on their neck a little bit and got them in, I mean, the Indian was the best at it. He could sell that nerve hold and, you know, we could have a riot from there. But if it was a newer guy, and I'd say to him, okay, time for your comeback. Let's go here. A couple of gut shots. And if he gave me a crappy shot, I would just say to him, harder, harder. Harder, because my philosophy was, you're a professional athlete, and if you can't take a punch or a forearm, then you shouldn't be there. Then you shouldn't be there. You know, and then some people would try to make a joke out of the business, and, you know, in the ring, then they would just get beat up. That's what happened.
Yeah, I always I understand connection. I mean, a lot of times you look at something and someone easily is just hitting air or their hand. And I mean, if you're watching a movie, you don't want to see Tom Cruise or even back in the day like Clint Eastwood punch his hand when he hits somebody.
No. Hey, listen, the guy that taught me the most about punching, well, two guys actually, Dick Morley helped me out a lot. He was like a father figure to me, but Bruno grabbed me once, myself, I threw a pretty good punch when I learned how to do it, once I learned how to do it. But Bruno said, let me ask you something. If you're in a fight, are you going to stomp your foot when you throw a punch? I said, you know, I never thought of that. No, I'm
God,
not going to do
that. Not.
He said, well, then don't do it when you go out there. He said, don't do it when you go out there. And what used to happen for a newer guy, and all of us were newer guys at one time or another,
right.
You know, you get an old-timer come up to you after your match, because almost everybody watched. Almost everybody watched. That was a really good way to learn, you know, maybe steal a move from somebody or see how to do something the right way. And an old-timer would say to you, hey, listen, you mind if I give you a little constructive criticism? You know, so if you are a real ass, you said, oh, no, please do. You know, and he'd take you, never in front of the guys. They'd take you, walk you into a shower or somewhere else and say, listen, I saw you throw this punch. Why don't you try to do it like this? Or you know, if you're not really good at it, here, try this, and this will work. You know, guys like that, Black Jack Lanza helped me out with that, Don Jardine. You know, so many of the old-timers, and it was a good business for the fans because Greg Valentine said it best, man. They believed because we believed.
Right.
We believed what we were doing. We believed what we were doing.
Absolutely.
Never make a joke out of what we did for a living.
Right. I mean, I can't quite understand, you know, doing it for a living because I was just, you know, the weekend warrior stuff. But, I mean, I'm sure doing it, you know, in and out for, was it like 16 years you had? That's some serious business.
19 years I did it.
19 years, wow. That is amazing.
And my body is showing it, you know.
Right.
I've had, I think, 14 or 16 major orthopedic surgeries.
Wow.
I've lost my hearing from getting hit in the head. My right ear is, I'm totally deaf, except I hear noises in it all the time. You know, I always say to my wife, what? She said nothing, I didn't say anything, you know. Or I'd say, what was that? And she'd say, what was what? You know, my good friend Pedro wiped out my right ear on me. Just the hardest hit I ever took. From Pedro. So we believed, and night after night it was a grind, and you know, if you were sincere about the business, you provided the same product in a little tiny town or a high school gym or a VFW hall as you did in Madison Square Garden.
Yeah.
Or Boston or Chicago or wherever else you went. Same thing, you know. You didn't cut it short because those people pay the same prices, and some of them save their money to get to see you wrestle, and that was our obligation to them.
So when you said Pedro, were you talking about Pedro Morales?
Yeah.
Very cool.
Pedro was a really, really close friend of mine. Eventually became, you know, 2 miles away was my neighbor. You know, we go back, and then Pedro's another guy that I actually got to work with in the business, that I watched work in the old Madison Square Garden when I was a kid. You know, that's the part for me that's kind of surreal, because the guys
right.
I used to watch and guys that were my idols that I'd say, oh my God, were still in the business when I started. So, I wrestled Pedro and Haystacks Calhoun and Bobo Brazil and Miguel Perez and, you know, and my close friends, Manny Soto, Johnny Rods, Pete Sanchez, you know, guys like that, Dominic, you know, guys like that, were still active. But Pedro and I were working one night, and I forgot that he was left-handed, and, you know, I was doing my heel stuff.
Yeah.
And one of the rules we have in the ring is, you know, you don't let somebody slap you unless you call it. Because a slap is an insult,
right.
and that, you know, somebody does it on their own, that usually is the start of a little scrimmage in the ring there. But I said to Pedro, as I was working on him, I said, when you come back give me the biggest slap you possibly got. And I'm watching his right hand, thinking, okay, here it comes. And crasho, he hits me with a left on the ear.
Oh, my goodness.
He hit me so hard that King Kong Bundy and Tito Santana were in the dressing room. And when I was leaving the ring, I saw them shake their head, and they were walking back in, and Bundy said to me, that was the loudest slap I ever heard. I said, yeah, well, it was on the side of my face and my ear. I said, how's it look? He says, well, your ear looks a little swollen up. Yeah, no kidding.
a little
swollen up. And you know, years later, just a little sad note, Pedro's son passed away years ago. And, you know, a bunch of us, of course, went over to pay our respects. And, you know, at that point, Pedro was already in a wheelchair and really having problems. But with my hearing, he was talking to me, and I bent down, and I said, Pete, I said, I can't hear you. He said, what happened, brother? Somebody slapped you on the ear? I said, yeah, somebody slapped me on the ear. You know,
so, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah, he was, you know, another guy that I miss, was really something. Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, so many good ones have passed on. And you made a great point about getting to work with guys. That was a great point of my short time, too, was getting to work with guys like Kamala and Honky Tonk Man, Jake the Snake. And it just really was mind-blowing and hard to believe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, like I said, for me, I mean, I was a dyed-in-the-wool wrestling fan. And at 7 years old, I was saying I want to be a professional wrestler.
Oh, wow.
You know, I had no idea how to do it or what to do. But, you know, I eventually had some wrestling background. You know, I wrestled in school and high school and college. And so I knew how to wrestle, but I didn't know anything about professional wrestling. I snuck into an arena in Kansas City and lied to the promoter and told him that Arnold Skolin sent me out here, said you can give me some work. And Gus Paris looked at me and said, you're in the business? I said, yeah. Oh, okay. I only did that because I used to bug Skolin and the guys in New York so much. They said to me finally, including George Steele, said, you know what, kid? Go to college. When you're finished college, come back and see us and we'll help you be a wrestler. So I was in college in Missouri, and I said, well, this might be an opportunity here. And I got on the bus, went to Kansas City. I had an empty suitcase, went to the arena at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, banged on the door, and usher said to me, can I help you? I said, yeah, I'm a wrestler. He said, oh, wow, you're early. I said, yeah, well, I just got in town. He let me in, and I sat in the dressing room until the guys started to show up. Not knowing what I was going to do, of course.
Hmm.
And the first two guys that walked in, the first two were actually Dusty Rhodes and Dick Murdoch, were working out there as the Outlaws. And they, you know, they came in and, you know, courtesy in our business, you introduce yourself to somebody you don't know. And they introduced themselves to me, and that was that. And then a little later, Gus Karras, who was the promoter, and Texas Bob Geigel came walking in and, you know, immediately said, what are you doing here? I said, Arnold Skolin sent me in from New York. You know, I was going to be out here in school and they said you could give me some work. And Gus Karras said, well, you mean you're in the business? You know, I think Bob Geigel was already getting smart to me.
Mm-hmm.
I said, yeah. He said, okay, we'll hang out and we'll see you after the show. And Bob Geigel actually set me up in a hotel that night in Kansas City where all the guys stayed and bought me breakfast in the morning and said to me, well, I'll tell you what, be down in Sedalia, Missouri Tuesday night and we'll put you in that ring and let you get going. So I did. That was it. Had no idea about the business. Was not smart. They don't smart me up back then. and they put me in there with a guy that absolutely cleaned my clock. Turned me every way but loose. I mean, he was unbelievable. He didn't hurt me, but I knew that he could anytime he wanted to. But, you know, that's, so there, no, like I said, no wrestling schools. And then I eventually, spring break or whatever the hell it was, came back to New Jersey where I lived. And I went to a wrestling show and said to Arnold Skolin, "Hey, Gus Karras sent me out here and said you could give me some work." and Skolin said, "You're in the business?" I said, "Oh, yeah." You know, I had, I think, 4 or 5 matches by then. Still wasn't smart. Still didn't know how to work. And Skolin said, "All right, kid." He said, "Tuesday night, be in Philadelphia for TV." And I did. I went down, and I was actually Tony Garea's first match in the territory.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was it was a different way to get in the business. But, you know, a little by little after that, because I guess I had a decent attitude, they booked me, and the guys taught me and took me under their wing and treated me very well, very well.
Yeah, I saw a couple of other men that you worked with that were some known real shooting workers. Was Danny Hodge and Lou Thesz. Those were some true legends.
That was my second and third match. My first match was a guy named Joe Scarpello. Joe Scarpello was an AAU champ, NCAA champ. Not a big guy, about 5'8" tall, maybe 210 pounds. You know, I was playing football in Missouri at the time. I was 260 pounds in really good shape. And that very first match in Sedalia, again, not being smart. You know, the old-timers didn't tell you about the business. You were just a new punk. You were lucky you were even sharing a dressing room with them. And we got in the ring, and I had heard guys talking, and I was picking up little terminology and little words and things like that. And the referee was a real crusty old-timer named Ronnie Etchison. And he says, "Okay, kid." He says, "You know, we'll get about 6 or 7 minutes here." And I said, "Are we shooting or are we working?" Now, I know what shooting meant because I was an amateur.
Yeah.
I had no idea what work meant. I had no idea, but I heard somebody say it. And Ronnie Etchison... And he had a really gravelly voice. He sounded like he had an ice skate stuck in his throat. He said, I heard him say, "Oh, Christ," just like that. And Joe Scarpello looked up at me and said, "Take your best hold, kid." Really? I didn't know I had a best hold, which I didn't. And, man, he just tied me up. You know, I didn't know he was an amateur. I could protect myself, of course, because I knew what to do. But I'm saying to myself, "Well, crap, this is not what I saw on television. Wait a minute here."
Yeah.
So after the show, I was sitting in a dressing room with my head in my hands and my elbows on my knees. And Joe Scarpello walked by me, kind of gave me a little slap on the back of the neck, and said, "Yeah, see you tomorrow, kid." And a little voice in my head said, "I'm not too sure about that. I don't know if we're going to do this again."
Right.
But sure enough, I did. And Bob Geigel said to me, "Well, listen, Friday night, we do TV. Why don't you come up there?" And that was in St. Joe, Missouri. So I went up to St. Joe, and I worked with Lou Thesz. Well, I didn't work with Lou Thesz. He worked with me. He did whatever he felt like doing. The only thing that happened was Lou Thesz in the dressing room said to me, he said, "Kid, I hear you're an amateur." I said, "Yes, sir, I am." You know, I was always polite and respectful. He said, "Well, listen," he said, "you know, somewhere during this few minutes we're going to be out there, I'm going to slap you in the face." Little did I know at the time that he was doing a little test in the dressing room there. I said, "Well, Mr. Thesz, if you slap me in the face, I'm going to slap you right back in the face."
Ooh.
I said, "You know, and he just kind of smirked and walked away. He never did slap me in the face. You know, Luthez had ways to let you know he was there, and he did. But we had a match, and then the next night I was in Waterloo, Iowa, and I wrestled Danny Hodge. You know, so if anybody knows the history of Danny Hodge,
yeah.
Oh, my God.
He'd crush an apple with his hand like it was nothing.
Oh, my God. But Danny Hodge is one of the finest gentlemen that ever lived.
Oh, absolutely.
And he took really good care of me. He saw that I was green, and he took care of me.
Yeah, Danny Hodge is the only wrestler that old, well, probably the only wrestler ever to call me sir, which surprised the hell out of me.
He's a wonderful guy, yeah.
He's been having some really serious health issues. It's really sad for someone that nice to
have to
deal with
him. He's just a wonderful guy. So, you know, so I got a treat. You know, I got to be around these guys that I used to watch as a kid because they were still working.
Right.
They were still working, you know, and for me, you know, the first time I worked with Bobo Brazil was a superstar in the 60s and 70s. He was a big deal. And the first match I had with him was really a stinker. Because of me. And later he came up to me, he said, "Hey, kid," he said, "what's going on?" You know, and this was after I was in the business for a couple of years. He said, "Man, they told me you were all right." And he says, "What the hell happened out there?" I said, "Well, I'm going to tell you what happened out there. What happened out there is you are Bobo Brazil. That's what happened out there." I said, "I was so intimidated by you, and not intimidated that I was going to get hurt, because you know, I wouldn't let somebody hurt me. I said, but because I was in awe of you." So he said to me, "Well, let's cut that shit out for the next time we work." He said, "Come on, kid." And sure enough, you know, we had other matches and they were fantastic. But, you know, here I was in the ring with Bobo Brazil. That's a big deal for me.
Oh, yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah. And then and he was in the ring as light as a feather. This guy was so light in the ring, sometimes you had to look to see if he was there.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I got to live the dream. When I complain a little bit, my wife says, "Oh, slow down, look what you got to do, you know."
Absolutely.
You got to do what you wanted to do since you were a little kid. You made a living at it. You know, I was lucky. I supported a family, and, you know, we always had a decent house, and, you know, we were able to buy a steak once a week, so that was not a problem, you know, so, she said, "Don't complain." She said, look what you got to do. And she's probably right, you know.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure you'd do it all over again if you were able to go back.
Yeah, I think you're right, Jimmy. I would just be a better businessman, though. I would just be a better businessman. I see how the newer guys kind of market themselves and get out there. I mean, with social media, it's easier.
Right.
I mean, we never sold a picture. We never sold a picture. We always had pictures made, and you had them. And if somebody said, "Hey, can I get an autographed picture?" Sure. You know,
right.
it was a compliment to us that somebody would even ask. So we did that. You know, we did that. There was no selling pictures. And to this day, I do some autograph shows, but I usually have whoever's running the show, they call me and say, "Would you like to appear?" You know, and I say, "Well, yeah, I'm flattered. Yeah, I'll sure appear, but you know, I'm not selling the pictures. I'm not selling the pictures. You can pay me to come there and appear, and I'll be a good appearance for you if the people are interested. But you know, I'm flattered if somebody asks me for a picture. I mean, I still send them out on Facebook. Somebody asks me, "Geez, can I get a picture? Can I buy a picture?" I say to them, "No, you can't buy one. But if you give me an address, I'll get something out to you." So that's what I do.
Well, I'm sure you'll probably get that email from me. I probably have like 1,000 autographs. I love signatures.
Yeah. You know, But I got, in all the times I was a fan, I got one single autograph, and it was from Miguel Perez, who at the time, when I was watching, was really, really a hot number in New York. You know, he and Pedro were partners. Yeah. He and Rocco were partners. You know, Miguel Perez was a big deal. I saw him wrestle in Asbury Park, New Jersey one night, and I was afraid to go up to him, and my cousin went up and said, Mr. Perez, could you sign an autograph for my cousin? And he signed the inside of a matchbook, and I think I still have that here. It was the only one I ever got. And I wound up working a main event with him in Puerto Rico.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. So, you know, a good life in the business, you know, except for the broken body, you know, and I wish I would have been a little smarter about the business side of it. But you know what? We did what we were told, and when you finished a territory, you went to another territory, and you know, you just did what you were told. You just did what you were told. That's why Dennis Stamp sometimes had heat, because he would speak up and say, well, that doesn't make any sense to me. Why don't we do this? And, you know, a promoter would say, I didn't ask you advice. You know, I just asked you to do something.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. So so that's how it was. It was great. It was a good life. It was a good life.
Sounds like it. Goodness, I got a frog in my throat. Sounds like it, Davey. Thank you so very much for joining me today. I had a great time talking with you.
Oh, well, it was my pleasure, and you know, you have a really good reputation, and that's why I didn't hesitate. So I thank you for inviting me. I'm flattered. I'm humbled. And you know, if anybody listens to it, well, you know, thanks to all the people that still support us, and thanks to the fans that watch, because without the fans, no professional wrestling. That's how it is. So thank you again, Jimmy. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. I try to keep a good show and a good reputation, so thanks for the good words. It was nice talking with
you. Okay. All right. Well, my pleasure. Take care, my friend.
All right. Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Alrighty, guys, actually, looks like we're gonna be back. Should I get all these windows downsized? August 26th, of course, we have actor Greg Martin joining us. He's been in a lot of awesome movies, video games, and TV shows, including Inappropriate Comedy, Mortal Kombat Rebirth, Mama's Boy, and iCarly. And, of course, that's 16 days from now, but we might have some other shows coming up. Of course, I also just released episode 2 of Jimmy Falcon's True Grind podcast, and we were talking about the Great Molasses Flood of 1919 that happened in Boston, Massachusetts. So if the creepy and the kooky, mysterious and spooky, or something that interests you, go ahead and check that out. It is at anchor.fm/cloverleaf-radio. I guess we will see you later. Thanks as always for listening. Have a great night.